Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle.
The Volume.
So an action-packed fight card is taking over Las Vegas for UFC 300, and DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any UFC 300 bet. Now, you know, one thing I love about these UFC shows is that they are competitive from top to bottom. The very first fight could be just as competitive or more as the very last fight. And when you have competitive fights, you've got lots of great bets to make. You should do it over at DraftKings Sportsbook. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code Mannix. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code Mannix. M-A-N-N-I-X. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Latino Heat. Chica, ¿tú quieres probar a un latino más? Ven conmigo.
Latino. All right, before we begin, Sergio Mora, former junior middleweight champion, DAZN broadcaster, contender winner, do you have an opening statement?
I do, and I'm glad you asked, Chris Mannix. I want your producer, Adam, to play my theme music since it's Cinco de Mayo weekend. I want Vicente Fernandez, Volver, Volver. Hit it.
Échate una.
Y volver, volver a tu podcast, Chris Mannix.
See how bad your voice is.
You know, I have a high-pitched voice. Like, for certain music, I can actually sing pretty good, like Prince.
So you're comparing yourself favorably to Prince now. Okay.
Anyone with a high-pitched voice. Bee Gees, yeah, I got it.
All right, well, let's stick with the mediocre boxing analysis, shall we? So let's talk about what we have this weekend, because it is a massive weekend. Canelo Alvarez taking on Jaime Munguia in Vegas. We are recording this on Tuesday, just before we head to Vegas. We're going to be there all week, Sergio.
All week. It's just music to my ears. Tuesday through Sunday. The roulette table doesn't know what's coming.
The most excited I've ever seen you has been when you were told about a few weeks ago that you could come to New York on Tuesday for Ryan Garcia-Devin Haney fight week, and that you could come to Vegas on Tuesday for Canelo Munguia.
No, I've been giddy for some time, Mannix. I mean, when they told us we were doing Canelo, I was lit. I lit up like a Christmas tree. Then they told us we're doing Subriel Matias in Puerto Rico. I said,
man, can't get there Tuesday for that.
No, I doubt that. It's been a great run. I mean, boxing is winning right now. Forget the fact that, you know, we're doing these great shows for DAZN. Just boxing is winning right now all over the place. It's incredible.
And the biggest event is where we're going to begin, Sergio. Right?
Mike Tyson, Jake
no,
Paul.
Man. Canelo. No. Canelo Munguia.
No, we begin with the big news this week surrounding Mike Tyson, Jake Paul, which is going to take place July 20th on Netflix at AT&T Stadium in Dallas. We have some rules, Sergio, for the Tyson-Paul event. It is going to be an official pro fight, a sanctioned pro bout, meaning that the result will go on the records of both these guys. Jake Paul fought last year. Mike Tyson has not fought one of these since 2005. It will be 8 2-minute rounds. They will fight with 14-ounce gloves. There will be no headgear. Your reaction to the rules for Tyson Paul?
Well, it's not a real fight. It's not a real fight. If you're fighting with 14-ounce gloves, that's sparring, one. If you are fighting a man that's going to be 58 years old, that's not a real fight. I mean, you're fighting a senior citizen. If you're fighting with your rules in 2 minutes, that's not a real fight. I mean, 2 minutes, no headgear, that doesn't make sense. It's a glorified sparring session, and it's a money grab. It's marketing at its finest, so I got to give them credit. But no, it is not a real fight. So no matter how you try to twist and turn this, this is not a real sanctioned fight. I don't want to get into the commission and shame on them. That's another thing. It's just how do you call this a real fight? It's not a real fight. It's a real event. An event that I give credit to Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. They're going to make a killing. Great for them. But don't minimize what we do in the ring as champions and real boxing and what Mike did for so many years. Jake Paul's not doing that.
Well, look, it's going to look like, it's going to look a lot like the Roy Jones Mike Tyson fight, because that fight was, I believe, 8 2-minute rounds. That fight had bigger gloves. That was not an official fight. Didn't have official scoring by the state of California. This one will have official scoring by the state of Texas. But I think it's going to look a lot like that. I don't love it that it's going on Mike's record. Like, let's say that Mike, at 58 years old, loses to Jake Paul, which I think is definitely possible. Like, right? Like, if he doesn't knock him out in the first round, this could go badly for Mike Tyson. I don't need to see the last name on Mike Tyson's professional box rec being Jake Paul by decision or something to that effect. That's the only thing about this that disappoints me. I'm really surprised, frankly, that the Texas Commission decided to sanction this as a pro fight. I mean, I think I read somewhere we've never had this big an age gap in a professional fight. It's 30, 31 years between these two guys.
That is exactly my point. That's why I started. You can't make this a real fight if you're fighting with oversized gloves, undersized time, because it's not 3 minutes, unless they're women, but they're not women that I know of. And you're fighting a senior citizen, Chris Mannix. That's not cool, man. And you know, yeah, you touch on a good point. How embarrassing is it for the legacy of Mike Tyson, not only to get knocked out by guys like Kevin McBride, who shouldn't even hold your jockstrap, but now Jake Paul? Credit to Jake Paul. He's a marketing genius. I'll say it again. This man is making a killing using his name and his following and social media. But now he's coming into a field where it's disrespectful to an icon. Mike Tyson's an icon. He's a iconoclast. And he's, I'm sure that's a word.
It is. I'm not sure if you're using it appropriately. But
yeah, that's Mike Tyson. Everybody and their grandma knows Mike Tyson. And everybody and their grandma knows Jake Paul. The difference is one is respected for something that only few men in the world can do, and the other one's not respected. He's just followed.
Well, I think Jake Paul's earned some respect over the years, haven't you? Like some of the guys he's fought, fighting real fights, taking his training much more seriously than other influencers do.
Respect is a strong word. I don't respect him as a fighter. I respect him as a hustler and a businessman, and I respect his passion for boxing. Yes, I do that.
We're going to have a lot of time to talk about this in the future, but like, how do you think this fight goes now that you know the rules for it?
The same way that I told you it was going to go earlier. I think Jake Paul's going to beat an old man. He's going to beat down an old man. It's not that Mike Tyson can't fight. It's not that he still can't punch hard. It's that he has no legs. He has no agility. Once that first round is gone, once those first 2 minutes, that's it. He's done. That's all he has. And when he misses, he's going to fall off balance. It's only going to take a glancing shot to the side of the head to make Mike feel all of those 58 years old. It's going to be embarrassing. We're all going to be embarrassed after that fight is done. And then, of course, you're going to see Jake Paul on the top rope, you know, celebrating like he just knocked out Mike Tyson in his prime. It's ridiculous, and it's utterly embarrassing.
I think for the first round or two, there's going to be a lot of intrigue in how that could play out. Because I think punch for punch, Mike Tyson's still a bigger puncher than Jake Paul. And look, we saw in the Roy Jones fight, which was 4 years ago, when he winds up and throws, he can still land a decent shot. So I do think it's going to go Jake Paul's way because the age gap is so significant, and Jake is not some novice boxer anymore. He's far more developed than some of these other influences. But first couple of rounds, Sergio, I can get excited. I can get behind it a little bit. Can't you?
No. Okay. I mean, I'm sure Babe Ruth can still hit a home run.
Babe Ruth's dead.
Wake him up from the dead.
Well, that's not going to happen. Before we move on, one other piece of breaking news that actually broke last night. We saw Turki Al-Sheikh, the Saudi official that is behind Saudi Arabia's investment into boxing, announced that Jared Anderson is going to fight Deontay Wilder on August 3rd, a card that is already massive. Now, this is all contingent on Deontay Wilder getting through what is really a 50-50 fight with Zhang Zhilei on June 1st. And you know, the idea that Deontay Wilder will turn around in 2 months and fight Jared Anderson seems a little, I'm skeptical a little bit of that, but I love the idea. You know, Jared Anderson, one of the rising stars in U.S. boxing, Deontay Wilder, kind of the last big heavyweight star in U.S. boxing, going at it in kind of a crossroads fight. I mean, I love the idea of that fight.
I'm happy for Jared Anderson. He's getting a payday. He's getting some recognition. He's going to be in there with one of the hardest punchers ever in boxing, a former world champion. Great for Jared Anderson. I just think it's not going to be a good fight for stylistically. It's not going to be a good fight. Anderson's a boxer puncher. Wilder's a puncher. He wasn't a boxer like he tried to prove to everybody in his last fight. Stylistically, it's not going to be a pretty fight, man. Even though the names sound good, it's not going to be like the real fight in that event, and that's Tim Tszyu. I'm telling you, Tim Tszyu and Virgil.
We're going to get into that. We're going to get into that. But I do think
that's the real one here, all right?
Why do you think Anderson versus Wilder is not an aesthetically pleasing fight? I mean, it's two big punchers.
It's two big punches. I just Wilder didn't look good in his last fight.
And no,
I
he
think,
didn't.
I think he's going to still try to do that. At this
Maybe
point,
he's off the ayahuasca.
At this point of his career, I don't think Wilder is looking to knock anyone out anymore. He's looking to win fights through boxing. And he does what fighters do after. He does what punchers do after they get knocked out. They try to become more boxers to extend their career and continue, you know, making money. And then what boxers become when they get older is punchers because they don't have the legs to do what they used to do. So it's a vice versa when you know you get older as a fighter. So I think that's what's happening here. Wilder's not going to be the puncher. He looked awful trying to box, and Anderson is a little bit of both, but he doesn't take chances either. I just don't think it's going to be an appealing fight for fans, but name wise sign me up.
I couldn't disagree more about it not being appealing for fans. Look, Deontay Wilder looked like crap against Joseph
there Parker, you go but, you made my point,
but he's got a chance against Zhang Zhilei to look good because Zhang Zhilei is going to be there. He's very hittable. That's a fight Deontay could win by knockout. If he does that, he gets a lot of his momentum back. And Jared Anderson, heavy-handed. I think only, what, two of his fights have gone to a decision. That's... And look, we're not even talking about that being the main event. That's probably like the third fight.
And that's why it's great. Yes. That's the reason here. I mean, you're stacking up. You're loading up on the undercard. That's the reason this is one of the greatest cards of all time. 1990's great. So yes, I'm excited about that. And credit... And a lot of credit to His Excellency for putting up the money to do this. And I'm so happy he decided to do it in L.A.
Yeah.
You know, that's incredible. You know, taking it out of Saudi, but still Saudi-backed. People know this is a Saudi event, and it's you know, it's all provided by Turki Al-Sheikh. And credit to him, credit to, you know, the fans for supporting it, and all the promoters who came together to work together, because that's what we need in boxing.
I think it's going to be a great atmosphere mm-hmm. inside that venue on August 3rd, because you're going to be able to choose from a lot of different fan bases, right? Like, you know, Isak Cruz has a lot of fans. Terrence Crawford has a lot of fans. Deontay Wilder has a lot of fans. Andy Ruiz, Southern California guy, mm-hmm. he's got a lot of fans. I think it's, what, 22,000 that can fit into that venue? I think we'll sell that out pretty quickly, you know, once the tickets are widely available. So I love that fight as part of the card. If if Wilder gets through Zhang, because Wilder could also get knocked out by Zhang. Like, Zhang has got real pop at heavyweight. I mean, he dropped Joseph Parker twice with shots that didn't even look like they were that hard. Like, he just hit him clean. And if Zhang lands those kind of shots on Wilder, he can drop and knock out Wilder as well. So we'll see what happens in that fight. You mentioned Virgil Ortiz and Tim Zhu. Virgil, just this past weekend, coming off a just one-sided destruction of Thomas Delorme, lands a body shot to the midsection of Delorme that dropped him in the same way that Bernard Hopkins dropped Oscar De La Hoya, that some other great body shots have landed. Just a picture-perfect body shot. Sergio, we have seen Virgil Ortiz now in two fights above 147 pounds. In January against Frederick Lawson, and now recently against Thomas Delorme. Both those guys are not natural junior middleweights. On August 3rd, he is going to take on effectively a career-long junior middleweight who is arguably the top guy in the 154-pound division. I know he lost his last fight, but that had as much to do with the cut on his head as it did with his performance in the ring. So, is Virgil Ortiz at this stage ready for a Tim Zhu?
He's ready for Tim Zhu. I just think it's going to be a 50-50 fight where whoever lands first is going to have the advantage. This fight does not go the distance. I think everyone knows that. And I repeat, this fight will not go the distance. Both men, I will predict, will get hurt. Maybe both will go down. This will be a good old Hagler-Hearns three-round fight. That's what I'm predicting here. There is no way these guys don't just go to war from the beginning, because stylistically, that's all they know. We know Virgil Ortiz just goes forward, tries to knock you out, and he loads up on every punch. Tim Zhu, on the other hand, he's like his dad. You know, he'll mix it up with you, but he would rather be on the outside trying to land that straight left right hand. They have one of the most beautiful, well-timed straight right hands in boxing. That's where he's in my trainer, Dean, used to love Costa Zhu. He used to tell me to watch Costa Zhu tapes because, you know, we fought Vernon Forrest. Costa Zhu beat him in the amateurs. Costa Zhu would have beaten Oscar De La Hoya because of that right hand. It was laser-like. It was incredible. The problem with Zhu is he had this weird kind of centaur technique where he kept his chin up. You know, he was always looking to punch, and they have such great timing that he got away with his timing. But once a guy breaks that distance, then they get in trouble with their technique. So I can see this being the type of fight where Virgil Ortiz takes advantage of that lack of technique and the chin being exposed, dropping, hurting someone like Zhu, and then going after the kill, and then Zhu dropping and hurting Virgil Ortiz. This fight comes down who takes a better punch. And I said that with Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney, and it was true. Who takes a better punch? Both men were hurt. Ultimately, Haney lacked the resistance there. Who takes a better punch? And I think that's going to be Virgil Ortiz, so I'll credit him.
So 2 years ago, I probably would have agreed with you, because that was the fight that Tim Zhu got dropped in the first round by Terrell Gaucher. Though since then, I have seen measurable improvement from Tim Zhu against Tony Harrison, who he wiped out, against Carlos Ocampo, who he wiped out, against Brian Mendoza, a tough guy, big puncher, and Zhu went the distance with him, like beat him up over 12 rounds. The Fedor fight, I think we both agree that would have gone a different way had that cut not happened. Two rounds in, Zhu looked like he was ready to dominate. So I think Zhu is a much better fighter than the guy you're kind of referencing.
Tell you that he has better technique and a better right hand, and normally he passes the eye test. I would go for him normally.
Normally, you're saying, but I think he's. I don't think he keeps his chin up as much as you seem to think. Like, I don't think he does that.
Watch him fight. He fights like his dad.
I have watched all his fights. I've actually bet against him a couple of times. Like,
he fights exactly like his dad. He even paws his nose He keeps his hands really high, and when he's in control, he's unbeatable. The problem is once he starts mixing it up, then he starts opening up his arms, and then he exposes his chin a little bit too high. He fights like a centaur, I'm telling you.
So you don't think it's too much too soon then for Virgil Ortiz, which is kind of what I'm getting at.
No, no way. I mean, I think the Kavalauskas fight prepared him for this.
Yeah.
If he would have fought Tim Zhu before Kavalauskas, then I would have easily picked Zhu for this fight.
Yeah. Even though the two guys he's faced at 154, or I guess above 154, he's been like a 155, 156 the last couple of fights, neither one of those guys is junior middleweight. So he has never really faced true junior middleweight power at this point. That's my biggest concern coming in, that, you know, yes, at welterweight, he faced some decent guys, most notably Kavalauskas, who gave him some trouble, you know, came close to knocking him down early in that fight. At junior middleweight, and really middleweight, He's fighting guys that are career-long 147s, 140s even for Thomas Delorme. I think that's the big question I have coming in. Is he able to be the same aggressive fighter when you've got junior middleweight power coming back?
He knows no other way, and that's the reason this fight won't last long, because Virgil Ortiz is a natural-born fighter. He's not going to be on the back foot boxing trying to, you know, I'll jab you and go for the distance. That's not his temperament. We haven't seen it, at least. He only knows one way, destruction. And Tim Zhu knows two ways, destruction and survival. And that's the reason I think, you know, when he starts boxing backwards, he can make it difficult for Virgil. But I just think Virgil takes a better punch, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, we're going to find out, because it's going to be bombs away, both those guys. Virgil said after the fight in the ring, said get ready for a war, basically. I think it's going to be a war.
Now, if Tim Zhu takes that power and beats Virgil Ortiz, we have a new star in boxing. I'm saying
I think
right
the
now.
Winner of this fight, one way or the other, is a new star in boxing.
Yeah, I agree, but it's always a little bit different when you're dealing with like an Australian. He has a whole country behind him.
Yeah, but Tim Zhu, and look, Tim Zhu, even put aside Australia, was starting to build his name more in the U.S. That Keith Thurman fight was supposed to be the big coming out party for Tim Zhu, where he got that name on his resume. I think if he beats Virgil Ortiz, maybe not a pay-per-view guy, but getting close to it. And I think Virgil Ortiz, who was right there as well, on the cusp at welterweight, didn't quite get that world title shot, but undefeated, all knockouts. I think he's a superstar if he wins. And by the way, this is easily be a fight that could be repeated. We could want to see this again a second time, a third time, just like we've been talking about.
Hey, who's gonna put up money for the rematch, Mannix?
I don't think the Saudis are going anywhere anytime soon. By the way,
I hope not.
If Tim Zhu and Virgil Ortiz wanted to run it back, that's a main event that you could make with a lesser undercard. Like, you could do that fight again, no question about it. You couldn't do it on this kind of mega event, but you could certainly do that fight one more time. And I hope that, you know, we get to see that at some point down the line. All right. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do, because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
I want to talk about the Jose Ramirez fight this past weekend. Jose Ramirez making his debut with Golden Boy, former unified champion, fights Rancis Barthelemy. Was off for about 13 months. And I think you saw some ring rust on Ramirez early on, got clipped with a bunch of left hands in the first four rounds before settling down, wound up winning a wide decision. How would you grade the performance of Jose Ramirez last week?
His performance inside the ring, I would say, is probably a C+, and that's being generous. But his effort and his resilience and his strength and the whole event, I would give it an A-. Honestly, I really like seeing guys go through fire. Because, you know, he's a former champion. We know he could take a punch. He took it from Josh Taylor. That was on the undisputed championship level. That's his only loss, so there's no shame there. But when you have an older former champion, 38-year-old Ranzis Bartholomew, rocking you like he did, then it's signs for concern. All right? So it's not just inactivity. It's signs for concern here. Does he really want it? Is he still hungry? Is he still preparing like he used to? These are all signs. So it wasn't a good performance as far as fighting. It was a great reminder of the will and the resilience he has as a man and as a fighter. So I just think I'm gonna be a little bit more. I want to test him in his next fight. I want to see how he looks in his next fight. If he looks subpar again, then I think we've seen the best days of Jose Ramirez at 31 years old. But if not, then I just think it was one of those inactive stretches that a boxer goes through. Believe me, I'm the king of inactivity. Mm. All my worst performances were after long stretches, so I'll give him a pass.
Well, I first want to give credit to Bartholomew, who was a lot more competitive than I thought he was going to be. I mean, I have watched a lot of Ranzis Bartholomew over the years, fought a bunch of times on Showtime. He's a two-time champion at 130, 135. I have not always found his fights to be aesthetically pleasing. I don't think he is a great television fighter, but he came to fight early on in this fight. That left hand of his was real. The power behind it was real. And just like with Devin Haney, Sergio, Ramirez couldn't get out of the way of it, like over and over again, to the point where in the third round, I thought there was a realistic shot that Ramirez was going to get knocked out. You know, he looked like he was knocked down. I mean, I've watched that a bunch of times since then. I stand by my original comments. That should have been a knockdown. But either way, he was wobbled and he was hurt. To Ramirez's credit, he was able to do what Devin Haney couldn't. He adjusted. He kept that right hand up. He avoided that straight left. He was able to slip it, move, duck under it, do all the things that Devin couldn't. Now, going up against a different fighter, different level of speed, that certainly is a factor. But I give him credit for settling down and continuing the attack. And I thought he won 9 of the 12 rounds clean in this fight. So I'd probably give him a B as far as an overall grade.
Not far from
me. C plus, B. Yeah, I think the way he shook off that ring rust was impressive. Like, I mean, 13 months off, two fights really in the last 3 years. I think that had a significant impact on the way he fought early on.
I did, and I don't want to see him inactive like that ever again. I just think if there's a lot of career left in Ramirez and behind Golden Boy, you know, this was his debut. He wanted to shine. He had the house filled. You know, that's the thing about fighting in Fresno. How many times has he fought there? What, eight?
Eight times at Save Mart. I think 11 overall, and that was a record crowd.
That's my point. It was an incredible night. So credit to Rick Meridian, his manager, always taking him there. He has something there that he should never go anywhere else. Ramirez.
Well, yes, he should, because there's bigger live.
Not if you're the A side. Now, if you're going to be going to fight,
it doesn't matter.
If you're going to be going to fight another champion, then yeah, you have no choice.
No, you treat it like Bud Crawford treats Omaha. You go back there every so often, but you take your bigger events to New York, Las Vegas, where they have bigger site fees, and they can charge more for tickets.
I think his promoter Golden Boy will disagree. They're going to be keep.
I think they'll agree
after what we just witnessed in Fresno. I mean, it was crowded. It was live. The fans loved it. He sells a lot of tickets there. So either there or Vegas. I can't see anywhere else.
Well, yeah, by all means, do fights on the level of Ranzis Bartholomew in Central California. But if you wind up in a world title opportunity with like Subriel Matias or against Teofimo Lopez, you go to New York City, Sergio. You go to New York City where they sell tickets at a lot higher prices than they were selling in Fresno.
Oh, well, you're talking about Teofimo Lopez. Okay, yes, that one. I agree.
But even on a lesser scale, and this brings me to the next point about what is next for Jose Ramirez. Okay. Because afterwards, Oscar De La Hoya said he probably needs one more fight before he's ready for a championship-level fight. So, you know, there's Arnold Barboza that's out there, ranked number one by the WBO. Regis Progre is out there. That's a makeable fight. Golden Boy and Matchroom. A lot of talent at 140 right now on that kind of B level that Ramirez could make. Who's someone you want to see him in with in his next fight?
Well, considering he didn't look great and he was shaking off cobwebs, I don't want to see him in with a Haney. I don't want to see him in against a Ryan Garcia or any of the top dogs. I want to see him in against a top contender or a former champion. So either Regis Progre, because stylistically that just makes sense. Both of them are there in front of each other. Or Arnold Barboza, an undefeated guy who's willing to take on all comers, wants to fight the absolute best. Give him an opportunity with a former champion in Ramirez. Perfect opportunity for both to shine and then get to the next level. So give me Barboza on a contender level. Give me a Regis program, a former champion level.
Yeah, and if you're Golden Boy, I mean, does Golden Boy want to make... They just signed both these guys. Do they want to put him in with each other right away? That would be the question I have. I actually like the fight because I think that's kind of a... Not exactly win or go home, but win and you're in the world title picture, lose and you're probably out of it for at least another year or so. And I like that fight. It's a competitive fight. I think it's a more makeable fight too because for a long time, Ramirez and Barboza had the same manager. From what I was told, Rick Merigian and Barboza have had a falling out. They're not working together anymore. Now, that's a much more makeable fight if someone in the middle is not kind of throwing up roadblocks, so to speak. So I like that fight. Both top five in the WBO. The winner kind of has a mandate to fight Teofimo for that belt. I think that's the right fight for him next. And you could do the, like, I'd probably do that more in Los Angeles where you can charge more for tickets. Maybe do it in Vegas, charge more for tickets, get a site fee. But if you want to do that fight in Central
Fresno,
California,
baby. I see it right now. Jose Carlos Ramirez versus Arnold Barboza.
But why would Barboza want to go there?
Save Mart Center, Fresno, California.
Why would Barboza want to go there?
I already told you. Look at all the fans. Look at all the people
that
love him.
The money is what matters. You know this. Why do I have to argue with the former fighter about where the most money is? You have fought in Vegas. You have fought in Texas. You have fought in Commerce Casino in California.
I've never fought at Commerce Casino.
All right, what are the casinos in California?
It wasn't a casino. It was Quiet Cannon.
Quiet. It's the same thing.
It's not a casino. It's a ballroom. It's a ballroom.
It's also a casino, though.
No, it's not, all right? You didn't grow up in East L.A. It's not a casino, nimnuts. Nitwit?
I think you're going nitwit, but
I was going to say
I think you're going to go numbnuts or nitwit. Numbnuts, you kind of stuck in the middle. Either way, you know that ticket prices vary, right? They're a little different in Quiet Can than they are in Vegas or even in Texas. I'm just saying, if you're Barboza, you want to make the most money. You don't need to do it in front of 15,000 fans that are all going to be against you. Like, why would you do it? But that's the right fight. Regis Progre or Arnold Barboza, August, September of this year. Get him back in the ring and then... Look, he's top five. He's in that position to fight Teofimo Lopez.
Who knows, Chris? Maybe Turki Alashik is a Arnold Barboza fan.
Maybe he wants to put on a Barboza fight.
There you go. Maybe he'll put up the money.
I guess.
And everyone will shut you up.
Do you have an issue? Like, we talked at length with Ramirez before the fight, and it was clear that the last few months, last 6 months, 8 months, have really taken a toll on him. You know, the process of extracting himself from Top Rank, the process of finding a new promoter, having a layoff of about 13 months. It was clear from talking to him that it took a lot out of him. That being said, like, he left Top Rank, and now he's still looking for that fight with Teofimo Lopez. I would imagine it got a lot harder to make that fight happen. He does have an option to maybe fight Matias, because Matchroom is aligned with the zone. But Matias, we know he's got other plans. He's got a fight coming up against Liam Paro, maybe a mandatory against Richardson Hitchens. Isak Cruz, I don't know how you make that fight happen if you're Jose Ramirez. And what am I missing there? Devin Haney's not going to fight him, at least not for the rest of this year. So I just think Ramirez is in a tough spot in terms of making a world title fight over the next year, year and a half, which he says is what he's looking for.
Every fighter, you know, once they transition from former champion to, you know, two-time champion or looking to become the two-time champion, normally at that stage in your career, like in your early 30s, you're going to move promoters because you've already succeeded and kind of they did everything they can for you. I mean, look at who left Top Rank and they split amicably. Miguel Cotto left Top Rank after they did an amazing job. Oscar De La Hoya left Top Rank after they did an amazing job. Floyd Mayweather left Top Rank after amazing. So they do they're the best promoter in the business as far as making a champion and protecting them and moving them the right way. But then once that fighter, that champion, keeps that zero and builds that name and it becomes a free agent, then he goes into the market, you know, and he goes wherever the best money is. And that's exactly what all champions should do. It's just a rite of passage. I think Top Rank understands that.
Oh, it's still unclear, though.
They made their money. They did their job, and now it's time for the fighter to branch out.
I mean, they did offer Ramirez $2 million to fight Teofimo. That's not nothing. Like, that's a real offer to fight for a world title. That's a winnable fight, too, for Ramirez. I mean, Teofimo is really good, but we've seen Teofimo look great. And we've seen him look very average. I think Ramirez could go into that fight believing he could win. I'm just saying, like, I don't know what the pathway to Ramirez fighting for a world title is until, like, the summer of 2025.
Yeah, I don't think he's in a hurry to fight for a world title next. I think he's looking at longevity, the second chapter of his career.
He's definitely looking at longevity,
He's 31 years old. So, yeah, that's what I would be doing at 31. I fought, you know, I was in my fourth chapter at 31. But I was still thinking of longevity. And look, I fought 7 more years, man. Mm. And Golden Boy was one of the promoters I fought with. I fought with Top Rank. I went all over the place. I bounced from promoter to promoter. And thank God, you know, I made really good money. PBC came around. I got another title shot. So you never know what's around the corner. You just got to stay optimistic and know that there's several chapters in a boxer's book.
And now you're trying to get into a room with Turki Alashik to say, Jake, hey, no, Paul, can you make more of Manfredo 3? Just put up the cash and we'll
either,
make more
either
of
that one,
3.
Either that one, the trilogy with Manfredo, or I'll do a sideshow with Jake Paul. Either way, I'm still open for it, Chris Mannix.
How many rounds with Jake Paul did you say?
I'll do 8-minute, 2 rounds. 2 minutes. I'll do a sideshow with him. Let's go. Head, you're not.
All right, so we are about a week and a half removed now from the Ryan Garcia-Devin Haney fight. So we've kind of moved on to the part of the story where we ask what's next for Ryan Garcia. I talked to Oscar De La Hoya on fight night this past weekend. He said he actually ran into Devin Haney running while they live in the same community in Vegas. So Devin's already out there trying to shake off that loss, get back into shape, but keep working towards his next goal. On social media, Oscar has been pretty negative about the rematch between Devin and Ryan. But in our conversation, he said, look, he told Devin to relax, get some rest, bounce back. Maybe next year we can do that fight. So there is optimism, I think, that we can get Haney Garcia 2 at some point in 2025. But Ryan's going to want to fight before then, right? Like, he's going to want to do some kind of event before then. As you look at the landscape right now, what's the right fight? He's not going to fight at junior welterweight anymore. Maybe it's as a full-fledged welterweight. Maybe it's somewhere in between. But what is the right fight for Ryan Garcia?
Well, he's going to be wanting to fight a welterweight, right? Or some catch weight around...
Yeah, I would always say 147 is probably...
147, okay. So then let's take the weight in mind. He's going to fight a welterweight. He's going to want to fight someone in the Golden Boy stable. And it's not going to be a big fight, you know, a big name, because there's nothing but killers at 140. It certainly is not going to be Esau Cruz, because that would be suicide. So I
know his dad kind of said... You see his dad? That dad clip says of a lot of things. Said, how about Pitbull?
That dad says a lot of things. I don't think they're going to want to make that fight next. I think they're going to want to do, after this mega event, a big event that he had with Devin Haney, yes, they would love that rematch. But we know how promoters, it's very hard to get, you know, Eddie Hearn and De La Hoya and Bob Arum and all these promoters in a room unless it's for serious money. So, yes, I don't think Haney rematches next, even though I would love to see that fight. I think it's going to be just someone in the Golden Boy stable. It's probably going to be a stay busy fight with someone like Alexis Rocha. I'll be honest with you. It's going to be something where it's not going to be a mega fight. It's going to be a stay busy fight. Ryan Garcia will still, make not $8 million, but he'll still make, you know, a few million dollars fighting Alexis Rocha. You could put it in LA. It's going to be a popular ticket seller. Rocha sells a lot of tickets. We know Ryan Garcia fills the house. That fight will make perfect sense in a crypto arena, you know, some LA Coliseum, the Forum. It'll do great. So I think that's a good stay busy fight until Haney comes around or he faces one of the big dogs at 140.
What do you think of the buzz about Ryan against Errol Spence?
I like the Derek James aspect to it now. I like that. A little
bad blood there because of that.
A little bad blood there. I like the way that Ryan Garcia, he's really crazy like a fox, man. Just when you think he's crazy, he's smart. So maybe he sees something in Spence.
But do you think he's big enough to fight Errol at 154?
Yes, he is.
And not at 147. No. Another 54. Weight class.
This kid fills up nicely. He has the height and the shoulders, and I'm telling you, he looked muscular. So yes, he can carry 154. Spence has already been beaten down pretty badly twice, Mannix. Mm-hmm. Once by Crawford, the other time by Ferrari or Lamborghini. What? Whatever it was, a car accident.
I'm trying to think of the fighter named Ferrari for a second.
Those are two bad beatings on his body. Yeah. You know, he hasn't been the same. So yeah, it's prime picking for Ryan Garcia. So that's what I'm saying. He's maybe crazy and appears like a lunatic and says some crazy stuff, but he is damn smart. Just like a marketing genius, just like Jake Paul. He's kind of like that. But he picks the right style matchup to look good against, and it's an opponent where people can respect and the truth in Errol Spence.
I could see Golden Boy going back to the Rolly Romero well for this next fight.
One more thing to add on top of that. Put that fight in Texas. How incredible would that fight be?
Great atmosphere, yeah.
You'll sell 50,000 tickets.
I mean, they'd probably do it in Vegas, though. There's more money in Vegas.
I get it, but I'm just saying, if you do it where they fought Mikey Garcia and Cowboy Stadium, 50,000 easily can show up there. But yeah, that's a Vegas fight.
Yeah, I don't know about 50,000. I think you can get 25,000, 30,000 potentially. But it's a good fight. I do think that Rolly Romero is going to be an option there. Rolly, of course, the shine's come off him after getting beat up by Isak Cruz, but you can say, hey, we're going up to a new weight class.
You know that Rolly would sell the fight. Like, he would jump up and down, then shove each other at press conferences. It would be
wild. It would be a pretty wild scene. So I could see that
being considered internally at Golden Boy. But the Spence fight is intriguing. Like, if Ryan feels like he can make 154 and still be as fast,
as strong, as powerful as he's been at 135 and 140-ish, I think that's an interesting fight. You know, and Spence got in the ring and challenged Sebastian Fundora, but we know that's not going to happen, at least not until December of this year at the very earliest. And that's if Fundora decides to give Spence that opportunity. So I could see that fight potentially happening. Let me ask you, though, about the Derek James stuff that broke this past week. You know, Derek, of course, is looking for a bigger piece of the Errol Spence pie. He was paid $350,000. After the fight against Terrence Crawford last year, Derek James in his lawsuit has said, look, we had an agreement for 10%. I found out that Errol Spence made $25 million for that fight, so I want 10% of that. I want $2.5 million as my fee. And in fact, I found out as well, I'm paraphrasing Derek James, that he made more money to fight Danny Garcia than I thought, and more money to fight Mikey Garcia than I thought. So Derek James is looking for back pay as well as part of this. Where do you stand on that? As someone that, you know, fought for limited money early in your career, fought for more money a little bit later, where do you stand on what a trainer is owed in these situations?
Hey, listen, I had issues like that in myself, and it wasn't $25 million. You know, it was not even, it was a lot less, but still, I had issues with that too, because, you know, whenever a boxer and a trainer link up, they're kids, they're teenagers, it's a handshake deal, man. So when they turn pros, when they turn professional, it's still a handshake deal. So it all comes down to knowing who you did business with. But once money, tens of millions of dollars, gets involved, then character and friendship and business and all that goes out the window, man. That's when you need to have, you know, a contract laid out. You know, if you make a certain amount of money, I make this percentage. If you pass and exceed that amount of money, then just give me a flat fee. Look at what happened to Triple G when he got that big money. Abel Sanchez, you know, disappeared. So many fighters have come to this crossroad with their trainer once they make tens of millions of dollars. And the ones that stick around, you know, the Canelos. We never heard Canelo and Eddie Reynoso have issues over money. And that's because it comes down to character and it comes down to friendship before the business. Certain fighters have that and certain fighters don't. So I don't know what to tell you there, Mannix. It's a tricky thing, because I get where Errol Spence is coming from as a fighter, but I feel bad and I respect where Derek James is coming from. It's a fine line, and they should add some paperwork.
I think there's a middle ground here where I think Derek James is deserves more than just the $350,000 that he was paid, but deserves a lot less than $2.5 million.
There you go. I'm with you on that. I wouldn't have given him $2.5 million either.
It should be a flat fee. Like Oscar De La Hoya with his trainers over the years negotiated a flat fee. Freddie Roach and Manny Pacquiao.
Manny Pacquiao does it. Every fighter negotiated flat fees.
Like, that's the mistake that was made. You know, expecting the 10% rule that you had an oral agreement on when he was fighting for $2,500 coming out of the Olympics to still be in place when he's fighting for $25 million. You know, against Terrence Crawford in the biggest fight of the year. So. Look, I don't think Derek James is going to win this, because you don't win on a handshake agreement. You don't win on an oral agreement. And by the letter of their agreement, technically Errol Spence did pay him the 10% of the $2.5 million he was guaranteed in that fight. That was the bare minimum that he was going to make. Of course, he made way more, $25 million plus, to fight Terrence Crawford, but I don't think he's going to win that argument. And I don't think he should win. I mean, the fighters, they're the ones in the ring. They're the one. Errol Spence took the beating that night, not Derek James, right? Like, and not to say Derek James didn't put the work in to help prepare Errol Spence for that fight, but you know, whether it's $500,000, $750,000, maybe even an even $1 million off that purse. Maybe that's what he's owed. But $2.5 million, Sergio, that feels like a lot. That feels like a lot.
I would have given Derrick James at least $1 million, and that's a damn good, you know, package.
That's a big payday,
aside from the 10% that was guaranteed and agreed upon.
And I bet Canelo's not paying Eddie Reynoso 10%.
No way. Anthony Joshua ain't paying, you know, his trainers that money either. Whenever you cross that line of like real serious big money, which hasn't always been the case, you know, these fighters are making obscene amount of money that's never been seen before. So now when they finally hit that type of money, they're like, whoa, what do we do? And then what do? You want to hold on to as much as possible, especially if you lost that fight. Because if you would have won, it's like, all right, I got another big fight coming. I got another $20 million paycheck. But when you lose, like Golovkin, like Spence, like Pacquiao, then you start thinking, oh, that might be my last one. Let me hold on to all this.
Yeah, but I don't even know about that, because the way Derrick James has framed it is that he wasn't getting paid the right amount for the other pay-per-view fights that he won.
I just hope I don't hear Derrick James having the same issue with Ryan Garcia coming up.
I think it, so tell me what you think about
that's going to be the next one.
Yeah, but I think it's a lot different when you are taking on an established star, right? Like if you were with your trainer from day one, Errol and Derrick James were together from day one. It was 10% back then, when 10% really wasn't a lot of money. When you go to a new trainer, I would bet there's a discussion to be had about how much you're getting paid. You're not just assuming if you're Ben Davison that you're getting 10% of everything Anthony Joshua makes on fight night.
You'll be surprised.
You think that they believe that going in?
You'll be surprised, because once a fighter made a name for himself and he's making all that money and he's looking for a new trainer, that trainer welcomes a cash cow like that, welcomes in, and you'll be glad
he's getting 10% of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
You think Ben Davison believes he's getting 10% of everything Anthony Joshua's getting? I don't believe that for a split second. Nor do I believe that Derrick James thought he was getting 10% of everything that Ryan gets.
I don't think it's 10% when it comes to Anthony Joshua money or Canelo or Golovkin.
I'm curious how Canelo does it, man. Like Canelo,
but 5% is still a lot of money.
5% is a lot of money. But you've never heard any disagreements between Canelo and his team about how much they're getting paid. I mean, they've been together from day one. It was Chepo Reynoso, Eddie Reynoso. It seems like they're all on the same page with this stuff.
That's character, man. It's character. And that man has it. Canelo has a lot of it.
Canelo stuck with his trainers. I actually was one of those people advocating for a training change back in 2013 when Canelo got smoked by Floyd Mayweather. I thought the game plan was bad.
You're always asking people to change trainers. I'm always the one having to put you in your place. You said the exact same thing when Joshua, you know, lost to Ruiz. Yeah, you said the exact same thing. No, you weren't right, but okay.
He made the change eventually.
And why is he still bouncing around from trainer to trainer?
It seems like he's bouncing with Ben Davison now, though.
Well, everyone finds something with Ben Davison. He's one of the best in the world.
I agree. Last thing. We are going to be headed to Vegas.
Are we finished here, man? This is overtime already.
It's not overtime.
It's like six questions already. You told me just three or four.
We're going to the airport together. What do you want to do? As soon as this is over, we're going to sit on our ass for 25 minutes before we can leave for the airport. Would you just relax?
Vegas waits. Let's go. Come on. Come on.
All right. Canelo against Munguia. Saturday, DAZN pay-per-view. Canelo's a big favorite, and understandably so. But the more I think about this fight, Sergio, the more of a chance I'm giving Jaime Munguia. Maybe it's because we've seen the improbable happen a lot over the last few weeks, whether it is what Ryan did to Devin, what we just saw Rance Barthelemy almost do to Jose Ramirez. But like, we've got a good young fighter in Jaime Munguia that throws a lot of punches, going up against a once great world champion who maybe isn't as great as he used to be. I mean, I think that's fair to say.
That's fair.
Is this fight closer than people think it's going to be? Because the perception is Canelo by brutal knockout. And maybe that happens, but that's the perception. Is this fight more competitive, do you think, than people think?
I'm glad you changed the words from closer to competitive, because I was going to say no, not closer, because it could still be a great and entertaining fight, but it's going to be one-sided. It's going to be competitive. It's going to be physical. It's going to be a good old Mexican standoff, man. I'm talking about Barrera Morales. I mean, I know it sounds like lunacy or blasphemy, but that's how good of a chin Munguia has. He's younger, he's fresher, he's bigger, he's probably stronger. And that's going to play a part in this. Canelo doesn't take chances anymore. You said it. He's not the great fighter he once was, because, man, he has 64 fights. He's been fighting since he was 15 years old, blah, blah, blah. All that goes out the window. You don't have the same engine that you once had. You have to fight differently. Munguia only has one engine. He has one gear, for God's sake, and that's forward to try to take your head off. So I would normally pick Canelo and by knockout here, but because Munguia has that chin and he's so big and he's going to hydrate bigger and he's motivated, he has enough time to prepare, and he's been groomed for this moment. Golden Boy Promotions and everyone around Team Munguia has prepared him for this Canelo cash out. If Canelo would have had him 5 fights ago, Canelo would have wiped the floor with him easy. But because Munguia has had the Derevchenkos and the confidence of knocking out a John Ryder, someone who Canelo could have knocked out, ignorance may be bliss, man. And confidence may be soaring for Munguia. But I think this is a winnable fight. And the closer it gets, the more I study it, I'm with you and I'm with that other crazy lunatic, Todd Grisham, who called it from the beginning. He was the only one that said, I'm picking Munguia in this fight. He was the only one so far.
He's picking Munguia?
He's picked Munguia back when we were in I forget where we were, but yeah, we did a round table and he picked
right,
Munguia.
Right, yeah.
So the closer it gets, yeah, man, I think Munguia is going to give a lot of issues to Canelo, but I still think Canelo gets him late. Canelo carries his power late, and even though he was struggling with Caleb Plant, he was struggling with Kovalev, he finds that way to knock you out, and I think the similar thing happens here, only I think it happens maybe one round sooner in the 10th.
So the changes that we've seen of Canelo in recent fights are twofold. One, he doesn't throw the same number of punches that he used to. The numbers, they back that up. Second, defensively, yeah, I see that clip on our social media, DAZN social media all the time, of Canelo avoiding shots. None of those clips are from recent fights, right? They're from Daniel Jacobs and what he did there and some of his earlier stuff against like Austin Trout and Arislandi Lara, like where he slipped punches a lot. He rolled with punches. Doesn't do that anymore. Kind of parries more, eats them in his gloves, is a different kind of defensive fighter at this stage of his career. Look, if this fight goes to a decision, I think Munguia is going to win. I think his punch output is going to be vastly more significant than Canelo's. I can see him winning a decision if it gets there. But Munguia's chin is suspect, Sergio.
And what?
It's suspect. He has
Munguia's
not,
chin is
Munguia's
suspect. You
chin
are nuts.
Is suspect. No, it is, because he gets hurt against lesser punchers. He has been hurt against Spike O'Sullivan. He has been hurt against Sergey Derevchenko. He was hurt at times against John Ryder. You get hurt by those types of punchers, and then you go in with Canelo. Canelo hits like a mule, dude. Canelo hits the body, hits the skull. He hits like a mule. So my concern with Munguia is that he's going to walk into a massive counter shot at some point, the kind of counter shot he can't take.
I think Canelo beats him down to the body. I think I've seen Munguia hurt to the body, too. I've seen him hurt to
Derevchenko got him there.
With Sullivan and Tyrion Johnson. Everyone's hurt. You know, rocked. I wouldn't say hurt. Rocked Munguia, but
okay, that's all I'm saying.
I think the body's going to be the bullseye for Canelo, and then from there he starts battering him up. And I think speed and explosiveness is on Canelo's side. It's the type of fight where he can be stopped late. But Munguia is in this fight in the first half of the fight. It's going to be fireworks, man. Fireworks. I'm telling you, it's going to be a great fight for 6 rounds.
Do you think that Munguia is going to fight the same way he's fought everybody else?
He knows no other way. He knows no other way. He's not going to come out. He's not going to come out trying to box on the back foot like Deontay Wilder in Saudi. No way. He's going to go forward. He's going to go looking to make it Mexican style, and 18,000 Mexicans are going to be cheering him on, because like I said, they built him for this moment, and now it's here. Time to cash out. Whether it's cashing out with money, but cash out going out on your shield. That's Munguia. That's Mexican style.
He's not great defensively. That's my concern. And I think he's going to get hit with something big. And when Canelo hits you upstairs, one of those shots you don't see coming because he's still really fast, I think that's going to stop him. So give me your official prediction then. How does this fight end, Canelo Munguia?
Canelo, 10th round knockout.
I'm going to say 7th round knockout. I think Munguia, to your point, is going to be fun early on. I think he's going to land some shots. Look, he's going to try to take a page out of the Dmitry Bivol playbook, right? Like, he's going to throw a lot of punches and hope that Canelo puts his guard up and doesn't respond with big shots in return. But I don't think he has the chin of Bivol. He's not as
chin.
Big
He doesn't
as
have
Bivol.
The footwork of Bivol. That's
I know all those things. Yeah, he can't get in and out. He's just going to be there to get hit. And I think he's going to get hit with something inside 7 rounds, I'm going to say.
You know who's not going to get hit? Me in Las Vegas, baby. Let's go. Roulette. Let's do it.
All right. We're out.
Thank you so much. I go sleep.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.